Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a film and theater composer, songwriter, conductor, author, and teacher whose list of accomplishments is truly staggering. After spending several years conducting musicals on Broadway, including Grease, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and Song and Dance, he went to Hollywood, where he was the conductor and vocal arranger on many Disney classic films, including Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame. He wrote music and lyrics for Disney's Aladdin and the King of Thieves, and he spent 13 years as music supervisor and vocal arranger of Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. His off-Broadway hit, Desperate Measures, won the 2018 Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, and Off-Broadway Alliance Awards. He's also co-written many other highly acclaimed shows, including Scandalous, Chasing Nicolette, which won the Barrymore Award for Best Score, Nellie Bly, and Money Talks, as well as his beloved Christmas oratorio, King Island Christmas, which has had over 50 productions around the world and which won a Frederick Lowe Award and Dramatists Guild Award. And his show entitled Listen to My Heart, The Songs of David Friedman, has also been performed throughout America and globally. He's written numerous classic hit songs, including Help Is on the Way, My Simple Christmas Wish, and Let the Music Play, all of which have won MAC Awards for Song of the Year. His multi-platinum selling songs have been performed by everyone from Diana Ross, Barry Manilow, and Petula Clark to Alison Krauss, Laura Branigan, Lainey Kazan, and of course, the magnificent late, great Nancy LaMotte, for whom our guest produced all of her albums and DVDs. For 10 years, he appeared on the Today Show every month, performing his songs live with some of Broadway's brightest stars. His songs have been used to raise money for charitable organizations, for children's hospitals, breast cancer awareness, and Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. He's released two CDs entitled A Different Light and Let Me Fly, in which he sings his own songs. In 1997, he received a Backstage Bistro Award for Composer of the Year and a Johnny Mercer Award for Songwriter of the Year. And in 2012, he received a special Lifetime Achievement Award at the MAC Awards. And if all of that weren't enough, he's become renowned for his work in metaphysics and human potential exploration with his number one best-selling book entitled The Thought Exchange, Overcoming Our Resistance to Living a Sensational Life. A new 20th anniversary edition of the book was just released. The book formed the basis for a critically acclaimed documentary film directed by Usher Morgan called The Thought Exchange. Since then, our guest has written five more books entitled The Healing Power of Negative Thoughts and Uncomfortable Sensations, It's All Inside, a thought exchange workbook for sourcing success and happiness from the inside out. We Can Be Kind, healing our world one kindness at a time. Help is on the way, from places you don't know about today. And How They Met, real stories of true love and the power of serendipity. And he has two more books on the way. I'm delighted to welcome the amazing David Friedman to our show. David, thank you so much for being here.
I'm exhausted listening to that resume. I feel like I need some sleep.
Well, you have done a lot, and I wanted to get it all in.
It was great. You know more about my career than I do.
Well, David, you've had enough careers for five people. You went from being a vocal coach to Broadway conductor to Hollywood arranger and conductor to songwriter, record producer, author, and teacher. And you've had huge success in each of those careers. What triggered so many changes of focus and direction in your life?
You know, it's very interesting. I think it's an odd thing that triggered it. It's that I would do something and I would be successful at it. And I'd realize I didn't feel better. It didn't solve all my problems. So I thought that must not be it. It must be something else. And so I kept moving until I realized that all of these things are part of me and they're just designed for me to express myself and to support the world and to share what comes through me. Because as a writer, I don't source it. I don't know how to write a song. I know how to open to a song. So it comes, they're all written already back there. And so I would do the next thing, but a lot of it, I have to say, in an odd way, came out of a sense of, wait a minute, I'm not feeling like all my problems are solved and my life is fabulous and whatever. And I kept searching through doing these things. So that's just the way it happened. And all of them are part of my interest, my talent, we could say. So it just worked that way. So I'm a jack of all trades and hopefully master of some of them.
Oh, that is an understatement. You had huge success working on all those classic Disney movies, but ultimately you came back to Broadway and musical theater. Is it fair to say that you get more satisfaction from stage work than movies and TV?
Well, I don't know. I get satisfaction out of all of them. The thing that really changed for me was when I was music directing and vocal arranging for Alan Menken, who I revere and who I loved working with. We could do a film on a 5-minute conversation. We were just that in tune. But I realized that I was in the effort to be in his voice, I was losing my voice. And so I realized I had to stop that. And I went to Alan and told him that. And he said, I agree with you. He said, I think you are one of the few people who's supposed to be doing what I'm doing. And if I were you, I would phase me out of your career. And so it was really the writing, the being, which always scared me. Writing scared me the most because it really is your voice. If you're conducting someone else's music or whatever, like they're responsible and you're delivering it. And so the switch that I really made, that was around the time I was conducting Pocahontas and we were preparing Beauty and the Beast for Broadway. And the shift I made was I put my focus on writing. I didn't conduct Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. I supervised it. I still had the vocal arrangements because I did the film. But it was mostly the shift to my own voice as opposed to someone else's.
Your show Desperate Measures is a country western version of Shakespeare's Measure for Measure. The show's won a ton of awards and it's been licensed in theaters around the world. Would you like to see the show made into a movie?
Yes, and we're actually talking to someone about doing that. And you know, it is this show's time because this show is, I mean, it's hilarious. It's in verse actually, but in, you know, Peter Kellogg is a genius. He's a Harvard English major and he wrote the book and lyrics and it's sort of country and western verse. But the thing about the show, it's very funny. You laugh through the whole thing, but it's really about the Me Too movement, about people in politics who are using people and attacking people and stuff like that. So it's extremely timely now. So a movie in 2024 would be perfect. And we are in discussion for it. So I'm hoping it happens.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Your show, Nellie Bly, is about New York's first female investigative reporter. Gloria Steinem said it was the strongest female story she's ever seen. Do you have any plans to bring that show to Broadway?
You know, those shows sort of nothing has been happening with lately. I would love to, and I think it's very timely. My focus has not been so much on Broadway lately. It's more been on writing and also on a lot of teaching and a lot of lecturing and a lot of coaching. The advent of Zoom during the pandemic was extremely fortuitous for me because I found I could do everything from wherever I was. So I coach singers online. I coach thought exchange people both privately and in classes. I give a weekly thought exchange class on Wednesdays at 5. I give a weekly singing class Mondays at 4. And so, and I do those classes very inexpensively so that people who couldn't afford necessarily to work with me privately have access to me, because it's really about disseminating the information. Nellie Bly is a show I love, and we did a great production in Seattle, but somehow Broadway has not been my focus lately. It's been more of the books and writing and teaching these days.
Well, we're going to get into that. But before we do, your latest show, Money Talks, is a four-character musical that follows the path of a $100 bill as it passes from person to person, with Benjamin Franklin playing the $100 bill as he comments on the state of the country. Yeah. Where did you and Peter Kellogg get the idea for that story? It's fascinating.
Well, Peter Kellogg, you know, there's a famous French play called La Ronde. And La Ronde is about one person sleeps with another person who sleeps with another person who sleeps with another person. And at the end, it comes back to the original. So we had the idea that in the passage of money, it was more Peter's idea. He's the idea person. It was in the passage of money, how each person uses the money, whether for good or whether for bribery or whatever, determines, you know, the outcome. And Ben Franklin is such an image of the original intent of this country, because one of the big issues now is, you know, everyone's the Constitution, and it's like, this country was intended as a certain experiment, and the question was, are we doing this now? Are we following that, or are we just busy fighting and screaming at each other and using the Constitution to manipulate things? So this play is very timely in that it addresses that and pokes fun. And again, it's very funny. One thing about Peter Kellogg, he always writes funny. I mean, it's always, you know, humor is the best way to break through these difficult emotional things people have.
Well, that's a show I definitely want to see. Now, as I mentioned in my introduction, David, you worked very closely with the fabulous Nancy Lamott, who tragically passed away at the age of 43 in 1995. She was one of my favorite vocalists. You produced all of her CDs, including four that you released after she passed away, and two DVD sets of her concerts. I have them all. Can you put into words what it was about Nancy's voice that made her so special?
Well, a lot of things, but the thing about Nancy was her personality was very delightful, sunny. She was a lovely blonde girl who had tremendous difficulties, tremendous challenges. She had Crohn's disease seriously since she was young. She had a very difficult childhood. She had a lot of craziness. And when she sang, she never displayed that, but she allowed it to come up through her singing. So you could feel that you were being sung to by someone who had tremendous empathy, tremendous feeling for what she was singing. Not to mention, I mean, it was an unbelievably gorgeous voice, and she was an incredible musician. So when I spotted her, I just went, oh my God, this is something special. She is really someone extremely special. And I walked up to her one day and I said, you should be recording. And she said, I know, but everyone says that, but who's going to do it? And I heard myself say, I'll do it. And I started a record company, Mitter Music Records, and we just started making albums, and she began selling. And the year Nancy never made more than $20,000 in a year. The last year of her life, she made $65,000, and she had $260,000 worth of work booked for the next year already. We were going to do Carnegie Hall. She was just about to really explode, and her illness coincided with it, and she passed. But there was, you know, she's just an extraordinary singer, and I'm kind of frustrated because I'm not a, producer. I produce records, but I'm not a record company, really, and I'd love to find someone who could take Nancy to the next level, who had the connections to make a movie about her, to get her into films, to get her into advertising, to get her into television. And so I'm constantly looking for that connection to proliferate her. Because to hear her is to love her, but more people need to hear her.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you about her on the show, because I want all of our viewers, if you are not familiar with Nancy Lamott's music, go to your favorite music streaming platform and get it. You'll be forever grateful. Now, David, you've devoted a lot of time to musical projects that teach children about regulating their emotions and being kind in a very innovative way. You have a video series called Koga and Friends, which is about using martial arts to resolve emotional issues. Tell me about that.
Well, my friend Philip Kolos, he lives in Malibu, and he's a very major martial arts person, a body worker. And he came to me with this idea that there's a little boy named Koga, and his mother is Norwegian and his father is from the Philippines. And his mother is an expert in Kung Fu and his father's an expert in yoga. So they named him Koga. And each episode on YouTube, Koga and Friends, it's called, is like a 6-minute episode on how they're all 8 years old, on how to deal with the challenges that 8 year olds meet. So one might be about going to the school nurse. One might be about adopting a pet. One might be about bullying. And Koga works with it in a peaceful way, and then he gives you a meditation and a posture to do to help you relax or to help you feel strong or to help you whatever. And it's really, we've gotten hundreds of thousands of hits, and now we're just starting to really elevate it. And I love doing this because, you know, if you're not regulated and in yourself and happy and connected, it doesn't matter how successful you are. It doesn't matter what you do. You're not going to have a life that feels right. And so I love to get kids and really teach them these things. I'm working on something called Christina's Cottage, which is about the same thing, about kids coming to someone and being heard and expressing their feelings. And so we're putting all these things out, and I've been doing them all speculatively, but it's a labor of love for me. And now they're starting to get some legs. They're starting to get some traction.
I think it's fascinating. I think it's long overdue. Christina's Cottage is for preschoolers. There's another series called The Soccer Gurus that teaches kids about soccer and life skills. Now, David, I know from reading your book that you did not always have the happiest childhood. Do you draw on your own childhood experiences when you develop shows for kids?
Of course. I mean, the thing is, people, and when it comes to thought exchange, people often say to me, it's amazing, whatever problem I bring up, you seem to understand it. And I say, I understand it because I have it. And this is the point. We are all humans, and we're all going through whatever it is to be human. And nobody has the answer to what God is and what this means and what's, we're all just in it. And so I definitely, all of these things were formed because I needed to hear them. When I write a song, it's usually because I need it. It's not because if I write a song, some of my songs have great wisdom in them and great, you know, peace and stuff like that. And people sometimes say, oh my God, you must be so centered and so focused. I mean, and I always say, if you think I think help is on the way, you're out of your mind. You know, I listen to songs. One day, I was having a real problem with something, and I was talking to someone who's a friend and advisor of mine, and she said, I want to read you something. And she read me something that was so perfect for what I needed. And I said to her, that is amazing. What is that from? And she said, oh, it's from a book called The Thought Exchange by David Friedman. It was literally, I wrote it and I didn't recognize it and I needed it at that time. So I totally, it's a really important thing that the best teachers are often people, like I've dealt with a lot of panic disorder and anxiety. And when you go to someone for help with panic or anxiety, you can tell in 10 seconds whether they've ever experienced it before by what they say. If they say, well, calm down and take a deep breath, and what you know they've never experienced it. If they say, I see you, sit here, be with it. How does that feel? Yeah, what's going on in you? Yep. Then you know that they have navigated this path. So I'm a person who I feel can help people because I'm navigating the same path that everyone else is.
Well, I want to get into thought exchange now. You say that the physical world is nothing more than a mirror in which we see reflected the thoughts going on inside us. In other words, we actually live in an invisible world of thought and imagination, and the only purpose of the physical world is to allow us to see what we're thinking. How do you know that the physical world isn't the real world?
Well, that's a lifetime. I just started to realize, like, for instance, my husband, who is a Unity minister, he says sometimes, doesn't it just irk you when people you can't stand have friends? And so I might say, oh, that's a terrible person. And someone says, no, I think they're wonderful. Well, which are they? Neither. And so the point is, this is the way it came about. In thought exchange, often at the beginning of a workshop, I'll say, close your eyes and notice your sensations. Notice what, and that's not feelings. A feeling like I'm happy, I'm sad, that's a thought about a sensation. A sensation is, I have a tightness here, I have a shakiness, I have a hotness, a coldness. Notice your sensations. Now notice your thoughts. And when you notice your thoughts, like I could be sitting here going, I wonder what I'm having for dinner. Oh my God, I have to shop at 4 o'clock today. You know, when I was 5, my father did that to me. But your thoughts are all over. So I say, notice your sensations, notice your thoughts, and now notice who's noticing those. Because the you that's noticing them is not them. There is an invisible consciousness, an I am, a being, and that's what they call God in the Bible, I am, that is noticing thoughts and sensations, but is not subject to them. So I can go, wow, I notice I'm really angry. Who I am is not really angry. So anyway, this is very tricky, because when you say you see your thoughts and sensations in the world, people think they're controlling the world. People think they're making things happen. Like if I think I'm a millionaire, then I'm going to see $1 million. No, it's that when you look at something, the only place you can experience something, like I don't know if you're really here. Right now you're dots on a screen, but I don't know if you're really here. You seem to be here, but if I was dreaming, you'd be here also. What I do know is I experience you inside myself, and all my thoughts about, you know, we got on the screen and I said, oh, that's how he looks. He didn't look like I imagined he'd look. Oh, that's how he looks. And I think that, and oh, this feels comfortable. And this, and if you had been nasty, I would have gone, he's nasty. But I might've gone, you're nasty, without knowing anything, if that triggered some childhood thing. So I'm only experiencing life inside of me, and in terms of thoughts and sensations.
So can you tell me if I have this right, David? The basic premise of thought exchange, as I understand it, is that in order to have positive outcomes in life, we should choose to think positive thoughts that will steer us towards what we want instead of negative thoughts. We need to accept and experience and stay with any physical sensations that those new thoughts generate. And those thoughts eventually become beliefs, which will then be manifested. But well, what we're seeing in the physical world is merely a reflection of our own thoughts, sensations, and beliefs. Have I got that right?
Well, you got it right, but there are a couple of things. The main reason I did thought exchange, I mean, there are a lot of new thought things like The Secret that say, think positive and you'll see positive. I noticed that we have a lot of trouble doing that. And I started to ask myself, why is that? We're not stupid. We're not lazy. We want this. And I realized if you have had trauma related to a positive thought in early childhood, like if you said, I can do this, and someone slapped you across the face and said, no, you can't, you quickly learn that that positive thought caused you to get hit. So the minute you learn that if you don't think it, you protect yourself. So I don't call them negative thoughts, I call them protective thoughts. So when you think positive, you immediately go to a negative thought so you don't get hit, except you don't get what you want. So what I say is, when you have trouble holding a positive thought, it's because a great fear comes up when you hold it because of some past experience. So you have to go, yes, this is the sensation. This is the sensation that comes up when I have this thought, and be with it. So I go on stages a lot. I'm always very nervous when I go on stage, but I don't call it, I can't go on stage. I call it the sensation I get when I'm going on stage, and then it turns into excitement or whatever. So the first step is you take on a thought, and you have to be willing to feel the sensations. Now, as far as what you see, like one of my favorite stories, I was at a dinner party and this woman was there who was in the middle of a very messy divorce, and she was hating her husband. And she said, that louse has left me destitute. He's taken everything. I am destitute. The only thing he left me was my apartment, and I have to sell it to survive. And someone said, what are you asking for the apartment? She said, oh, $7,750,000. Now, that makes us laugh. But the point is, she could see $7 million and experience destitution. So the $7 million intrinsically, you know, if Bill Gates was down to $7 million, he'd be in a complete panic. So we look at the world. So when we take on the thought, we will see the world as we see it. Now, since everything in the world is happening at the same time and is available, we will ultimately begin to gravitate. Like if you think, another favorite, I had a woman come to Thought Exchange. I'd never met her. And she said, there are no men. I can't find a man. I can't meet a man. There are no men available. So I said, well, in the complete unmanifested, is it possible that in ways you don't know, there's a man for you? And she said, well, that has to be. I said, yeah, just hold that thought. She left. I didn't see her for a year. She came back in. She said, there were no jobs. There were no jobs. I'm trying to get a job. It's impossible to get a job. I was just telling my husband the other day that there was, she had a husband, you know, in the year before it had been, there were no men. So she has that thought rolling, which doesn't mean it's not true, but if she thinks there are no men, she will not see the men who are right in front of her. She'll be looking this way. So it does result in manifestation, but where people make a lot of mistakes is the manifestation is not the point. It's the point is, what are you thinking? And how are you living in the infinite possibilities that always exist?
Well, what's the difference between the power of positive thinking or positive affirmations and thought exchange?
Because people do those things, and then when they don't work, they don't know why. But the thing is, they're doing them, and then they're getting the uncomfortable sensation, and they're moving off of them. Or they're doing them with the thought that they're trying to put something over something that is negative. And so what I did was I took all those things, and I thought they're really valuable and they're really good, but thought exchange is a way to get them to work. It looks at the obstacle, which is our sensations, And it looks at that you're not controlling something else. You're not trying to make something happen or someone do something. You are able to take on whatever thought because you're able to be as uncomfortable. Like when someone says, I want to be really famous and successful, I say, great, are you willing to be that uncomfortable? Because it's uncomfortable to be famous.
Well, that leads me to this. One of the key messages in your book is that getting what you want in life does not necessarily make you feel good, right?
Absolutely. Like someone will say to me, David, imagine when you're out there on that Broadway stage on opening night, how you're going to feel. I know how I feel, like I want to throw up, you know, because I'm nervous, but I want to do that. In order to do Broadway, I have to be able to feel like I'm going to throw up. And so people think they're on the wrong track when they don't. They say, if you're going in the right direction, you'll feel good. No, you're climbing up the mountain. You're exhausted. You're whatever. It's when you hold the thought, you don't get to choose the sensations, but you get to either embrace them or fight them. So that's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, what I find so challenging about thought exchange is that we've all been conditioned to define happiness and success and even good health by the physical things that we can see and feel and touch and measure. It's very hard to unlearn that, I find.
But you know, when you look at life, I mean, there's a wonderful practice called Tonglen. It's a Buddhist practice. And let's say you get a diagnosis and you're very upset. Now, typical wisdom would say, breathe in the positive, breathe out the negative. But in Tonglen, you think of every person in the world who has a similar diagnosis, millions, and you breathe in all their pain and you breathe out love. And so suddenly you're not alone. So we are human beings. People think that if they do this stuff, they're not going to get sick or they're not going to lose money or they're not going to break up. It's about embracing and living life with all of its stuff. It's like people who make money when the stock market goes up and when the stock market goes down. So there's this idea that I'm going to get rid of all my problems and then I'm going to be good and I'm not going to be sick. No. It's when you get sick. What is this? How does this feel? What can I do with this? How can I share this? How can I whatever? So there's a wonderful Buddhist writer named Pema Chodron. And she says, the only solid ground we have to stand on is that there is no solid ground to stand on. And when we can really get that and feel things, and not I'm controlling this and I'm fine and you dump this in it, but this is life. And it's, when I work with people in thought exchange, I'm not working to get them to have no problems. I'm working for them to be alive and to be able to run their lives on the inside to find joy, to hold. There's a wonderful saying one of my students gave me. Her mother used to tell her when they were having trouble, I wonder what wonderful surprises God has in store for me today. And whatever God is to someone, and I wonder, anything can happen. I wonder how this is helping me. I wonder how this is setting me free. But we have this thing, don't do this, have this, that's bad, that's good. There's a wonderful Buddhist parable, a lot of Buddhism in this, where there's a poor farmer and all of a sudden a horse arrives and he says, oh, how wonderful that this horse arrived. I needed a horse. And the Buddhist says, maybe good, maybe not. Next day, the farmer's son is riding that horse and he falls off it and breaks his leg. And he says, how terrible that horse came, so my son should fall off and break his leg. And the Buddha says, maybe good, maybe not. The next day, the army conscription officer comes and takes all the boys in the village to the army except the Buddha's son because he has a broken leg. He says, oh, how wonderful. Nothing is either wonderful or terrible. It's just as it's experienced. So if we can look at every experience, feel what it is, feel, oh, I got this diagnosis, I feel terrible, I feel hopeless, I feel blah, blah, blah. Okay, what is this? How can I think about this? How can I hold this?
So if the physical world is simply a reflection of our thoughts, then obviously creating the thought that will steer us to the result we want is crucially important. My question to you is this: how do you get to really thinking the thought you want to think rather than focusing on the thought you wish you were thinking?
Now, you see, you can pick any thought, like you're sitting in front of a buffet. You can pick up anything. The thing we have to take out, which everyone puts in and you put in, but we all do, is the result. It's not about the result. So for instance, it's always freaked me out that when I look, that I would never know what my face looked like if I didn't have a mirror. I could have a big smudge on my face, I can have whatever. So I have the mirror. So I'm looking right now in Zoom and I'm seeing me in the mirror. Now, notice that you're seeing you in the mirror of Zoom. Do you notice that you're almost thinking of yourself as being in the mirror? You're looking at that person, and now take it and know that I'm here and that this mirror is only, if I do this, that mirror does this, but the mirror is not doing anything. It's just showing me where I am. So it's a tool. So we're given this tool of the world so we can see what we're thinking. So someone asks someone out on a date and they say no. Almost anyone would get a sinking sensation in their stomach. Some people would think, I'm so unattractive, no one would ever go out with me. Some people would think, that's odd, I wonder why they don't want to go out with me. Some people would think, wow, did they miss the boat? Some people would think, oh, obviously there's someone better for me. It's all the same incident. So you see the incident and then you get to see how you're thinking. And if you take the thought, I'm ugly and horrible, that's what that means, then you'll take to your bed and you'll never go out and you'll never ask anyone out. If you say, wow, there's someone so much better than them, then you will ask all these people out and, you know, other people may turn you down, but you're living in that thought. So that is what you will seek out.
Well, if there's a cause and effect relationship between what goes on inside us and what appears before us, then when something terrible happens, like a fatal illness or the Holocaust or 9/11, did our thoughts and beliefs produce those events?
No. We are seeing our thoughts in those events. They're just events. It's like, interesting, I speak Italian, and in Italian, the word for accident is incidente. It's an incident. It's something that happened. It's not something that wasn't supposed to happen. It's not like my life was going along and then it got interrupted by a car accident. My life is going along and now my life is the car accident and now my life is the recovery and now my life is whatever. So even a value judgment, even what we call, and even death, we decide the object is not to die. Interesting premise, since we all will. But to say, I don't know what death is. I don't know what this is. I don't know. And so we're looking at something. If we have a value judgment on what we see, then immediately we're gripping. And so what we're actually doing is we're seeing and create. It's like when a great actor puts on makeup, they look and they don't go, oh, I'm so beautiful. They go, oh, all right, let's see. I need a little bit more here. How does that look? Okay, no, let me fix that. They don't put makeup on the mirror. And then they walk away from the mirror. And as soon as they walk away, there's nothing in the mirror. So we're, you know, the thing is, I always say, the reason, say, people like Tony Robbins are so much more famous than I, because they tell you, do this, do this, do this, and you will have these fabulous results and everything. I say, come to my workshop, pay me, and I guarantee you'll leave feeling worse than you came in. You want to do it? You know, but in fact, it sells, because everybody's ego wants to believe that there's a way to overcome this and a way to never be sick and a way to never die and a way to have everything. And they believe that money is going to do something for them, but it's only our consciousness that is living. And when our bodies fall away, we are just consciousness. And so it's that result, that, and it's very hard to get, because we all want stuff and we all want to say, I'm doing fabulously. And yeah.
Well, I'm fascinated by what you've written about relationships. Let's say a woman is in a relationship with a man who's physically abusive. You say that she needs to ask herself what thoughts she's thinking that are being reflected by what's happening to her. and then she needs to exchange her thoughts for more positive ones. Doesn't that feel a bit like we are being asked to be responsible for other people's bad behavior?
Well, let me give you an example. Many years ago, I was in a very long relationship, and it was clear that I was not getting what I wanted. It was not happy. So I prayed that he would love me in the way I wanted to be loved. Well, I was not willing to leave, and he was not willing to love me in the way I wanted to be loved. Somehow, unconsciously, my thought shifted to, I am willing to be loved in the way I want to be loved. And I was not willing to leave. He was not willing to love me in that way. He left me because that was the fulfillment of that thought. So when the woman, boy, it's like when you do 12 steps in Al-Anon, for instance, people go into Al-Anon because they want to get the alcoholic to stop drinking. That is not the purpose of Al-Anon. The purpose is, what am I inside doing with myself? So if that woman is in an abusive relationship and she takes on the thought, I have great value and I should not be abused, he might shift. And if he doesn't, she might leave. And that thought would give her, because in the thought, I deserve this, she's going to stay in this. I mean, when I was in this really not good relationship, I said, I knew my partner was a drug addict the third week of that relationship, and I was out of there in 15 years.
Well, let me ask you now about money. I've got to tell you, this is fascinating, and it's such a treat to get this chance to ask you these questions. I so appreciate the time you're taking to really explain these questions, the answers.
To myself, too, yeah.
So let me ask you about money, David. You wrote that money is not a thing. It's an idea, an energy, a concept, the reflection of a thought. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, for instance, when you have a depression on money, you know, a financial depression, there is no less money around. There's always infinite money around. But it just is moving slower. It's people are depressed. So they're holding back. So they're doing, you know, inflation. What is inflation? We all have a thought that I have to make more money. I have to make more money. I can, this is, and it goes, it's not a thing. We could immediately, if we all decided, just take the prices down in half. But there's a thought going on that is resulting in this. So all I can do is look at me. I have a good friend whose father was making a big investment, and someone said to him, are you out of your mind? There's a recession going on. And he said, oh, I know, I'm not participating in it. And people make money during these things. So in other words, when I look at money, if I really look, I see that I have ideas about money. Like, for instance, we were doing a workshop, and this woman walked in, and she was very, you know, new thought, and she said, I am open to infinite abundance in every way. So I said, really? She said, yes. So I said, here, and I handed her a dollar. She said, what's this? I said, it's a dollar. So what do I do with it? Do I pass? I said, no, it's yours. She said, do I put it in the middle? I said, you're open to infinite abundance and you can't take a dollar. And what we realized is she was only open to infinite abundance if she earned it, if she thought she earned it. So she was leaving out gifts, surprises, windfalls, everything. And so we can tell, if you want to know what you're thinking, look in the mirror. If you want to know what your hair is doing, look in the mirror. Like the mad woman with Chaillot who said, I never look in the mirror, that old woman is in there. You know, and so with money, if we look carefully and go, I have the idea that I can't have money. I have the idea that money is difficult. I have the idea that I'm only allowed to have a certain amount. You'll see that you have all sorts of ideas that are in there. So we have to get out of the notion that I'm making this happen. We're seeing ourselves. Look at this Zoom. You and I are not in this screen. There's a bunch of dots in this screen. There's nothing in this screen. I can't reach into the screen. If I reach into the screen, I hit the glass. Everything is happening here, but I'm seeing this. In life, we are living in the illusion that it is that screen. So I say, that platinum record in back of me, I don't like where it is. I'm going to try and I can't move it because it's not in the screen, but I can walk right over there and move it where it lives. So I'm seeing a thought in the screen. I cannot change it. And we keep seeing a thought and we keep trying to change it in the world, but we're generating the thought into the world. And so there's no blame, no fault, just reality.
You've worked with Fortune 500 companies and coached their highest level executives, which I find fascinating because the corporate culture is heavily focused on productivity and money, which are very much a part of the physical world. How did these executives react to what you were teaching?
Well, it was very interesting because, you know, you get hired by someone's boss to get them to produce results. So how can the person trust you? Because, you know, you're reporting to them. So I would close the door and I'd say, okay, this is what it is. I don't give a crap about what they want from you. I only care about you. So let's look at what's going on with you. And one of two things will happen. You will either do what they want because it's in you, or you'll leave this job. So I was working with a fashion company, and the president, often when corporate coaches come in, they target someone because they want to have a justification for why you're paying them so much. So this woman was being targeted because she was too hands-on. She like went and fixed the toilet one day when it was broken. She knew how, and they said she's too. And so I did a singing thought exchange with all the executives because it puts them all out of their comfort zone. They have to sing and see what they think about. And this woman realized that she was holding the thought, I suck. And after the workshop, she exchanged it for I rock. And she was really happy with that, I rock. And the next day they fired her. And I called her and I said, listen, you were holding the thought I suck for 2 years, and you were working at a job that you were perceived as sucking at. The minute you exchanged your thought, that job disappeared. Do not take on I suck because of this incident. Hold I rock. And within 6 months, she was running a company that required someone with hands on, and she was where she belonged. So this stuff just changes all over the place. It's like fluid, and it's like the Bible starts with, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. It doesn't say God said, let there be light, and then he went to work and he built it. It just, the ether goes, and it's all in here.
Well, a lot of what you teach has to do with healing childhood trauma and emotional scars caused by bad or neglectful or insensitive parenting, correct?
Yes.
So when a person is learning thought exchange, is it helpful to go to a therapist to help manage the sensations that might arise from these new thoughts?
Well, therapists don't necessarily manage the sensations. It can be very helpful. I mean, I work in conjunction with a lot of people. Certainly, it can be helpful to talk about the incidents, to do what therapy does. I've been in tons of therapy myself. And it's all helpful. I mean, thought exchange is sort of something that, in my book, I talk about how thought exchange interfaces with massage, with Buddhists, with therapists, with all different kinds of therapy, with it's not something in itself. It's just something to position you and to work with in ways that help you in whatever ways they help you.
Do you believe in destiny?
I believe that every moment is a point of infinite possibilities. That at I'm sitting here, I could walk this way, I could walk that way, I could walk that way, I could walk that way. And then when I walk this way, then I still, like a checkerboard, I can move in any direction. But if we're holding certain thoughts, like the woman who, there's no man, now there's no job, we will keep moving toward those thoughts. So it doesn't matter. Thought exchange, like if I have an, if you're cooking, baking a cake, you don't pick up the pepper, but the pepper's in the kitchen. You don't go, no pepper, no pepper, I don't see the pepper again. It's there. So when you exchange a thought, the other thought is there. So the name thought exchange, we have a store that's called the Thought Exchange, and it's better than Nordstrom. It has a 100% exchange policy, and it carries every thought possible. So we used to do these little skits. Someone say, hello, welcome to the Thought Exchange. What would you like to exchange today? And she'd say, I'd like to exchange, I'm a piece of crap for I'm great. And she'd say, terrific, here's I'm great. We'll take I'm a piece of crap, but we're going to put I'm a piece of crap on our display case because many, many people come in for that thought throughout the day. And so you, all the thoughts exist. You're sitting in front of the buffet. You can pick up the lobster, you can pick up the spinach at any time you want. And you never lose infinite possibility.
And so when you think of the concept of God, how do you envision where or what God is?
I don't think God is anywhere. I think God is everything. God is not omnipotent. God is omnipotence itself. God is, and I am, the name in the Bible for God is I am. I am is consciousness. God, so God is in me and in everybody. And then there's the God that created us. We cannot know what that is. God is a word we made up for what we can't understand. And to just allow that, so I can't know God, but I can hook into the system. If I want to turn on that light, I don't poke the light, I go to the switch, and I flip the switch. Now, I have no idea and never can. I can understand electricity, but I can't understand why there's electricity. It just is. And to, in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, now I view the Bible as allegory. It didn't happen. There weren't two people named Adam and Eve who 5,000 years ago in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were in Eden. They were in heaven because they were completely living in grace, allowing there's food, there's this. They were just in God. Then they wanted to know. They wanted to control it, to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Once they went to control it, they fell out of grace. Now, in the original Aramaic Bible, the word sin means losing your connection to God, to that grace. So they sinned, which religion has made bad, you're terrible. No, they fell from grace into separateness, into sin. And at any point, God is available if we let go, make up and think whatever we want to think, and then allow ourselves to live within that. And it's hard, and it goes back and forth. It's thought exchange happens every 5 seconds. You know, I have this thought. I notice, I'm in it, I'm out, I'm in it, I'm out, I'm in, like meditation. But you can always reach for it.
Well, one of the tools you teach, David, that has really helped me is to ask myself, what would Oprah be thinking about this situation? That was the strategy I used at every step when I created this show. And I truly believe the thoughts I've held on to over the past 2.5 years have a lot to do with the enormous success we're having. So I want to thank you for that.
And, you know, and we don't even know if Oprah's thinking that, but Oprah is sharing with us that. And also we're seeing Oprah's success. Now, Oprah, is Oprah a completely happy person? Has Oprah had a wonderful? Hardly. But she has allowed herself to think that with all her issues and all her problems. So when you asked earlier, how do you take on a thought? You just think it. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to feel it. Yeah, and that's the thing. People say, I'm taking on the thought that I'm taking care of, and I suddenly feel this. So they think they're wrong. No, that's what comes with the thought I'm taking care of. So you took on the thought. What would Oprah think? And it doesn't matter if Oprah thinks that. It's your thought of what Oprah thinks.
Right.
And you made it up, and you made yourself up with the success.
Well, I'm a great believer in gratitude. It governs pretty much everything I do. Where does gratitude fit into thought exchange?
Well, gratitude comes from the word grace. And so, and grace is, you know, all of this, the fact that I'm living and breathing and my heart beats and I'm on this planet and is grace. It's just fell on me. I didn't earn it. I didn't do anything. Grace is unearned, you know, wonderfulness. And so, in fact, like when someone says to me, I finally decided to give up control, I say, you had it. You know, I mean, and so gratitude is being aware that, wow, all of this is available and a solution is available to every problem and a thought is always available to me and life can always change. And even in this, I remember there was a story about Maya Angelou and her daughter. She got word that her daughter was in a terrible car accident. And she immediately said, thank you, God, thank you, thank you. Not thank you for making a will, just thank you for whatever this incident is. Thank you for whatever this means and is giving me. And so it's like the two kids who get Christmas presents. One of them gets all these toys and the other one gets a pile of manure. And in a few hours, the one with the toys, they're all broken and he's bored and he's tired and he's cranky. And the kid with the manure is dancing around in the manure. And someone says, how can you be so happy with a pile of manure? And he says, with all this manure, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere.
I want to tell our viewers that you can learn more about David Friedman and his work with Thought Exchange by going to his official website, thethoughtexchange.com. Well, David, I know you have two new books coming out entitled Did I Ever Tell You? And The 10-Minute Thought Exchange. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about those books?
Well, as you might have gleaned from this interview, I tell a lot of stories. I was walking with my friend Lucy Arnaz in Palm Springs, and she said, I have the title of your next book. And I said, what? She said, well, you tell so many stories, and you never remember who you told them to, so you always start with, did I ever tell you? And she said, I want to write down all your stories. So I started the book with, I tell a lot of stories. I was saying to my partner, Sean, if I ever start telling stories like my father did, shoot me. And Sean said, do we have a gun? And so I just tell stories about everything. There's 900, some about my grandmother, about my family, about celebrities who I've actually been in contact with, celebrities who I've heard gossip. And I say, my lawyer asked me to say, this may not be true. You know, I just heard it. And it's just a book of stories to kind of keep by your bedside. And there, I find I tell stories like in this interview, they all have something to do with, in a parable way or a parallel way, the clarifying an issue or clarifying a feeling. And then the 10-second thought exchange, it's just what we said a minute ago. People think, oh, and now I've got this positive thought. But in fact, take it on for 10 seconds, then it's going to go away. Take it on again for 10. Just take a little break and go, I'm going to sit here and think I am extremely wealthy for 10 seconds. Now, then all the thoughts of, no, but I'm not, and they're going to come in. Fine, let them come in. But you've had a few seconds to tell your nervous system and to tell the ether that this is the thought you're putting into it right now. And that will influence the way things feel and work in your life.
Oh my God, I can't wait to get both of those books. You have a huge fan in me. You probably know that already. It's been a huge pleasure having you on our show, David. Thank you for all the music. Thank you for awakening us to a new way of achieving our goals and spiritual fulfillment. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on our show.
It was a pleasure. This was a wonderful interview. I really enjoyed it. So I'm very happy to do this.
Well, it was a pleasure, and I hope I get you back when those two new books come out.
I'd love it. Consider it done.
Thank you. Our guest has been music superstar, author, and teacher David Friedman. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to our producer, Steve Silver, my director of programming, Deborah Batsafin, my PR director, Laurie Towers, and my entire team at the XPTV1 network in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
The weather may be cooling down, but the deals are heating up during the Red Hot Sale event at Omaha Steaks. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, beefy burgers, cozy comfort meals, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE when you shop omahasteaks.com today. From tailgating essentials to everyday family favorites, the Red Hot Sale event is your chance to save big on everything you need to serve up fabulous fall flavor. USDA certified tender steaks, plump and juicy air-chilled chicken, easy appetizers, and even cozy comfort meals for those busy weeknights. And every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Blaze a trail to omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the Red Hot Sale event. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com code HOTSALE. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.